From the Center for Investigative Reporting in PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. This is the sound of rapper 50 Cent lighting a Gucci t-shirt on fire.
Ooh, my hands are getting hot.
This was after Gucci put out a black sweater with big red lips that looked a lot like blackface. 50 Cent and other celebrities like rapper T.I. were calling for a boycott.
We don't have to force them to like us, but what we do have to do is stop spending our motherfucking money with people who gonna continue to give you their ass to kiss.
It's been a big year for boycotts, from Gucci to Starbucks, Nike to the Super Bowl, and it got us thinking, where does the word boycott come from anyway? So we started looking into it. Turns out, it goes back to one man, Charles Cunningham Boycott, a.k.a. Captain Boycott. He was an Englishman living in Ireland in the late 1800s, when all of Ireland was ruled by England, and the Irish countryside was divided in a way that was almost medieval. You had poor peasants who lived off the land, and then you had rich landlords who owned the land. Captain Boycott was right in the middle. Reveal reporter Stan Alcorn has his story.
Captain Boycott was barely a captain. His parents bought him a spot in the British Army, and he quit after just 2 years at age 20. He spent the rest of his life farming, horse racing, and doing the job that would make him famous, collecting rent as the agent for a landlord who owned 2,000 acres on Ireland's west coast. I wanted to see that land, the stone houses and boggy fields, for myself. But my boss wouldn't pay for the plane ticket. So instead, I started calling up people who live there. And I found a lot of them know the story of Captain Boycott as part of their family history.
Hi, it's Elaine. How you doing?
Elaine Nocton's ancestors were farmers who paid rent to Boycott.
My grandmother used to always say, they were hard times, but nobody knew any better. Because everything was very equal back then. If you were running short of milk one day, you knew you could go to the neighbour and you'd be given milk. And in exchange, you'd give back eggs the following day. Everybody wanted the same thing for everybody else. They just wanted a fair rent.
But what seemed fair to farmers depended on the harvest. And in 1879, the potato crop was the worst in a decade. There were reports of starvation and a fear that the Great Famine that had killed one out of every 10 people in Ireland just a generation earlier was about to repeat itself. So Captain Boycott's tenants got together and sent a message to his mansion, the Loch Mask House, asking him to lower the rent by 25%. Boycott said no, and he had the local process server, that's basically the official court messenger, start serving them with eviction papers. He went house to house with an armed guard of 18 police officers.
What seemed to have kicked it off was when they tried to deliver an eviction, or they did deliver an eviction notice to a widow.
According to the local paper, the widow told them, "You'll not serve my house as long as I have life in my body."
The story goes that she had a red flag, and once she raised the red flag, all the women and children came out from behind the bushes and basically just started pelting the process server with stones and kind of drove them the whole way back to Loch Mask House.
The next day, a crowd of maybe 100 men, women and children swarmed a hill near Boycott's house. It looked like things were about to get violent.
Yeah, and from my understanding, I think Father John O'Malley kept control on that.
If anyone could control the crowd, it was Father John O'Malley, the parish priest whose influence you can see in the rough limestone church he built, where today Father Paddy Gilligan has taken his place.
Keep out the breeze.
On the wall next to the altar, there's a small bronze plaque for Father John O'Malley.
Very simple. He will be forever remembered as a faithful priest and a defender of his people's rights in very hard and trying times. And I'd say that that was certainly the mood of the people, you know.
Can you compare the role that he played in the community at that time with the role that you play now?
Well, it would be to contrast rather than compare, I think.
While Father Gilligan speaks gently about building community, Father O'Malley gave fiery speeches, warning that landlords wanted to annihilate the Irish people. He was the local leader of a political movement sweeping the Irish countryside called the Land League. that saw the fight for the rights of Irish farmers as the first battle in a war for Irish independence. But he didn't want it to be an actual war.
Around that time, there were quite a number of incidents where the agents of landlords who were trying to collect rent were actually murdered. So he tried to persuade them to make their protest, but to make it peacefully.
And he had a specific protest tactic in mind, one that had just been laid out in a speech by the president of the Land League, Charles Stuart Parnell. His speech was reenacted in the 1947 movie Captain Boycott. At the speech's climax, Parnell asked the crowd, "If a landlord evicts a farmer, what should you do if another farmer helps the landlord by taking over the evicted man's lease?"
"I think I heard somebody say, shoot him. There is a very much better way, a more Christian and charitable way. You must shun him. Shun him. On the roadside when you meet him, in the streets of the town, in the shop, on the fair green and in the marketplace, and even in the house of worship. By isolating him from his kind as if he were a leper of old. If you do this, you may depend upon it, there will be no man so lost to shame as to dare to face the cold, accusing finger of public scorn."
Scorn and shunning. These were the weapons of the Land League. And Father O'Malley helped convince his parish to use them on Captain Boycott.
Apparently, he'd be walking down the street and he'd be shunned.
Elaine Nocton again.
No one spoke to him. The postmen refused to deliver his post. Every single person participated in it. Like, he was completely left on his own down there.
The blacksmith wouldn't shoe his horses. The baker wouldn't bake him bread. Not only did the farmers refuse to pay him rent for their land, they wouldn't do any work on Captain Boycott's farm, which left him with acres of potatoes and turnips that were about to rot in the ground. Until, in a plot twist in the movie version that also really happened, Boycott wrote a letter to the Times of London, where he found a more sympathetic English audience.
"Extraordinary letter here, Humphrey. Fella called Boycott out in the west of Ireland. Can't get his harvest in.
Seems his labourers have left him in a body."
As Boycott's story spread, 50 British loyalists from Northern Ireland volunteered to come help with the harvest. And the British government chipped in with an armed guard of hundreds of British soldiers.
"Didn't I tell you the landlords would fight to the last drop of the other fella's sweat?"
Reporters came from all across Europe to watch them dig up Captain Boycott's tubers. The so-called Boycott Relief Expedition worked, but it was expensive.
It made no sense. Like, it's reported to have cost £5,000 to save 500 euros worth of crop.
Boycott couldn't afford another harvest like that. So when the army left, so did he. The shunning had worked.
It was quite simple, but effective.
As Captain Boycott fled, the word boycott was just getting started. Credit for coining it typically goes to two men, Father John O'Malley and James Redpath, an American journalist. According to local lore, it happened a short, muddy walk from Father O'Malley's church in a house that's now a stone ruin covered in lichen and ivy.
"Stoop down when you come in."
Joe Graney was born in this house, as was his mother and his grandmother and his great-grandmother.
"Now we're going into what used to be the kitchen."
And he believes a great aunt of his rented a room to Father O'Malley.
"And right sitting here in this room, inside that window is where Father O'Malley would sleep. Because that was the bedroom when I was a child where my grandfather and grandmother would sleep. And left of that was a little pantry, we called it, where we left a bag of flour and old wet coats and the dog slept in it, etc., etc. And if you look, there's one stone there at an angle with a lovely little turn on it. That is most likely the stone they were sitting at the day that Father O'Malley used the word."
In Joe's telling, Father O'Malley was talking to the journalist about another landlord, a man named Brown.
"Let's get Brown. Let's do what they did to Boycott. Let's do a boycott job on this Brown. That's what we're going to do. We're going to boycott Brown. That's the stone that they were most likely sitting at, exactly at that fireplace in there."
Boycott was catchy. And Father O'Malley saw that by putting it in the newspaper, James Redpath, the journalist, could help it catch on all across the country, like a 19th century hashtag.
He saw him as the modern day Twitter or the then Facebook, where I can get our message from this little village to the world.
A year later, there had been more than 1,000 recorded cases of boycotting in Ireland, with tenant farmers winning millions of pounds in lower rents. A year after that, the word boycott was in the dictionary in the US, and it was being used in France, the Netherlands, Germany, and Russia. In the place the word was born, people are proud of this history. But not everyone. I asked local producer Dermot McIntyre to knock on the door of Captain Boycott's old mansion.
Hello there. I'm with an American radio station.
The current occupant is the grandson of the man who moved in after Captain Boycott left. His name's John Daly. He's nearly 90, and he has a dissenting view on Boycott.
They say he was a good fella and a jolly fella.
I have to say, you're the first person I've ever met who said that he seems to have been a nice guy. Because the story, you know, that he'd want to beat you with his...
I remember now going to school, and the first thing the teacher was saying, Boycott was a bad man, he wanted the money from the tenants, and he was this, and he was nothing, but he was an Adolf Hitler, according to the teacher, you know. But I couldn't see that at all, like. Could happen to anyone today.
To John Daly, Captain Boycott was just doing his job, working for the landlord.
Was it fair what happened to him?
Well, I wouldn't think it was fair, but it was, if you like, a sign of the times. That's the way it was. And we were taken over. The mob law, if you like.
This view, that boycotts are a threat to the rule of law, was there from the beginning. Britain's prime minister at the time called boycotting intimidation for the purposes of destroying the private liberty of choice by fear of ruin and starvation. And it wasn't just the English. The first judicial opinion in the U.S. to use the word boycott in 1887 upheld a charge of criminal conspiracy for passing out leaflets for a boycott against a publishing company. The judge called the boycott a power outside of law and said that, like the taste of human blood by tigers, it creates an unappeasable appetite for more. Part of why the original Irish boycotters are mostly seen as heroes today and not bloodthirsty tigers, is that mob law eventually became actual law. A few decades later, Ireland won its independence, and the new Irish state took farmland away from absentee landlords and gave it to their old tenants. The few acres of the old boycott estate went to Elaine Nocton's family.
So my mother's family would own some of it, and then the majority of the land then around it is all owned by neighbours.
Elaine is proud of her ancestors, but she's never taken part in a boycott herself.
I haven't had need to yet, so not yet.
What do you think it would take to make you join in a boycott?
What would it take? Well, I suppose if it was coming to a point where I was losing my home and people around me were losing their homes, then certainly, you can imagine starting some kind of a revolution or a boycott or whatever. I just don't think you'd know where to start today.
People are losing their homes today. It's just that it's often some international bank doing the evicting. And what do they care if one small town shuns them or stops paying rent? But then again, small town shunning, that's not what most boycotts are today. Instead, there are people all over the world making individual gestures of solidarity that they hope add up to something greater. The word's the same, but the boycott, like the world, has changed.
That was Reveal's Stan Alcorn, with help from producer Dermot McIntyre in Ireland. Special thanks to Brian Casey. The piece was edited by Jen Sheehan. Our production manager is Najib Amini. Our sound design team is the dynamic duo, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Fernando, my man, Yo Aruda. They had help this week from Catherine Raimondo and Caitlin Benz. Our CEO is Krista Scharfenberg. Matt Thompson is our editor-in-chief. Our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Our theme music is by Camarado, Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Heising Simons Foundation, and the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Edson. And remember, there is always more to the story.